everybody, I'm Levinovi with PragerU here, and today we're in West Los Angeles. We're going to be asking people, is America a racist country? I'm sure we're going to get a lot of mixed views, some hard yeses, some hard noes, but either way, we're going to have some civil discourse. So come along, guys. Hi, sir. Do you think America's racist? Would you like to share your thoughts? Oh, no. That was a strong yes. Is America racist? Any thoughts? They're avoiding me. Like the plague. It's for a video that we're asking people questions. Okay. He said Prager. Okay, thank you. No, thank you. Any thoughts on race in America that you'd like to share? Any opinion whatsoever? Everybody has thoughts on social media. Nobody has them in real life.
Yes, it is.
Is it? Would you like to be interviewed?
No, not now.
All right. Okay, guys, so we did eventually get some people who wanted to talk to us about the subject matter, is America racist? And as you can imagine, it's a pretty broad question. We got a lot of different talking points, some of which you probably hear from your friends, your peers, your family, when you're having these discussions, and we went back and forth. Some of the conversations were contentious, others very kind, people on the same wavelength as we are, and we even went and changed some minds. So I'm actually going to go through some of the clips of these discussions that we had, some of the many arguments that you can hear surrounding systemic racism in America, and let's see where we get to. Maybe we'll learn something. Is America racist?
America is plagued by a history of systemic racism built into the structure of how this country came to be. So yeah, so that's my
sure. Yeah, let's dive into it, because we know, like, virtually any country that has ever existed has had some form of slavery take place within its walls, and America is no exception to that. We've went through slavery, went through Jim Crow, and all this segregation. However, we have, as a country, progressed out of that. Do you think that there are still remnants of systemic racism in our country, and if so, what do you point to as evidence of systemic racism?
I would say basically economic disparity, the continuing gerrymandering of districts to benefit a certain population and to disadvantage a disenfranchised population.
Do you think that we could focus more on class and not make it a race issue, or are those things inherently connected to one another? Because there are plenty of underprivileged white people who live in low-income communities as well and experience that same amount of lack of privilege when compared to people like us, you know? Do you think we can service ourselves by taking race out of the equation there and try to focus more on class and helping all people of lower income?
Well, I don't know why you need to remove race from the discussion. If removing race is just because it's an uncomfortable discussion and it becomes something where people start yelling at each other, I don't think that's a reason to remove it. I think definitely addressing the class and economic disparity issues is important for this country.
Let's pause right there for a second. He mentioned that maybe we shouldn't just remove race from the conversation because it makes people uncomfortable and it makes people go into maybe violent altercations about the subject matter. I would argue, and it didn't get expressed in this video, which I wish it had, but in the moment of, you know, first conversation, you never know what you're going to say, that we don't want to remove race from the discussion because it causes an uncomfortable conversation. We're more than ready to have an uncomfortable conversation. We want to remove race from the equation because it actually points to a problem that is not exactly the root cause of the disparities that we are witnessing. Class has so much more to do with being privileged or underprivileged in America than your race does. But because we go racism, 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 look, black people are being disparately impacted by this policy or this legislation or things like gerrymandering. We cry racism when really there's a lot of low-income white people, Hispanic people, Asian people who are probably experiencing those exact same problems. But because we say it's racism, and racism specifically towards black people, we actually turn our heads away from finding the real solution to these issues. So that's what we mean when we say maybe we should remove race from the discussion there. Okay, interesting. So a couple of questions here, because we did mention that class, you know, lower income white people probably share the same struggles as lower income black people. Do you think that, say, a lower income white person in Appalachia still benefits from white privilege? If white privilege even exists in your worldview?
Well, I think white privilege exists. I think that the disenfranchised and the economically disadvantaged white person or any of any race is dealing with similar issues. However, I don't know the answer.
Right. It's a hard thing to come to terms with, right? And so I used to be a person who was very pro-Black Lives Matter, and I was actually a leftist activist for quite some time. And then somebody started posing these questions to me, and it made me sort of question where I was in terms of speaking about white privilege and looking at an entire group of people, you know, like you included, and going, well, you have privilege just by being born who you are born as. And that question was brought up to me, and I had trouble answering it myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question.
Don't know the answer to that question. Which, you know, when I was going down the rabbit hole, as I said, I was met with that question. You know, does a white person who's born in a lower income community is experiencing the same exact problems as a black person who could be born in that same community or a community like that, do they still benefit from white privilege? Because we have this idea in our brains that white people are just constantly held up, you know, they're walking on clouds as they live here in America, when that's certainly not true. For a lot of low-income white people who live very underprivileged lives, but we still look at them and because of their skin color, we tell them that they're privileged. And of course, that's not correct. You can't look at an entire group of people and say, because you are all part of this group, you all have the same characteristic of privilege. That's a little racist. Isn't it? So I'm glad we got to that conversation, and I'm glad he said something really important. And he said, I don't know. So many people are scared to say, A, I was wrong, and B, I don't know. And the fact that he was brave enough to come forth, be on video, have this conversation, and say, you know what? I don't know. I think that's amazing. And more people should be up to doing that, or at least confronting their beliefs, even if it doesn't end in them saying, I don't know, or I was wrong. Even if it reinforces their beliefs, we should still come to the table and have those conversations. Give this one 10 out of 10. So we're asking you the question we're asking everybody. Is America a racist country?
Yes, America is a very racist country.
Okay, let's talk about it. So where do you think America is racist, or what examples do you have?
So America is founded on immigrants, okay? So people from Europe escaping tyranny. And one really big issue that I have with people in this country is not understanding that the only people who deserve to be on this land are Native Americans. No one has a say in anything when it comes to being an American unless you're Native American. You know, I have French friends, I have Swedish friends, I have German friends here in Westwood, and I tell them, I'm like, why did you come here?
Really? Really? Okay. So we have a lot to unpack. Let's unpack it all first. No. I totally get it. Okay. So you talked about Native Americans, and Native Americans being the only ones who can truly speak to what being an American is really like. But what we have to think about, I think, and I used to be totally on your side of things, super pro Black Lives Matter, got this super like black power tattoo, but I started questioning things a little bit. And, you know, every piece of land in every country that is on this earth right now was inhabited by somebody else before us. Is it our onus as people who live here now in the modern day to go and track down every single person who was previously on this land? And even with Native Americans fought with other Native Americans for their land. What do we do about that? Or do we just move on and accept people as equals?
I think we should just move on and accept people as equals because...
I love how quickly the tide turned on that question, which is great because sometimes people just don't understand the full scope of what they're saying. You know, when you say something like Native Americans are the only ones who have the right to A, be in America, and B, talk about what it's like to be an American, you're really saying that for every single country on this earth, which was inhabited by who even knows who hundreds, thousands of years ago. So you'd have to track back and do all of that for every single country. But this seems to be an American issue. I know it's seeping into other countries right now. I've spoken to a lot of people from Europe, Germany, London, who say, you know, we're having the same issues and maybe at an even larger scale than you guys are. But these are the questions you have to pose to people because that's a very radical thing to say. Native Americans are the only Americans who can speak. I don't think people realize how radical of a statement that actually is. And then when you point it out, oftentimes it's just like, oh, yeah, what you just said makes total sense. Let's keep watching.
I just feel like if we are going to keep our roots as, like, what it is to be American, you know, in the sense of, like, the American dream, I think we should just keep a forward-thinking mindset and, like, be more progressive about accepting different and new things, because if we keep pulling back and being closed-minded, you know, because that's a big issue in this country, being closed-minded, we're not going to go anywhere, and we're going to end up destroying ourselves.
Right, I completely agree, and I think in a lot of ways we're already doing that. You know, we are looking at racism, and we're talking about systemic racism, and I don't know if you go to UCLA. You don't, okay. But UCLA is right across the corner. And them, like a lot of other universities, they engage in something called affirmative action, where they look at you because of your race, and they go, well, because of your race, I'm going to put you higher on my list. Yeah. Do you think we should be moving towards that as a future, or maybe we should start taking things like race and gender off of applications and just judging people based on their merits?
Yeah, I definitely think we should take that off. I think we should be looking at people for their intellect and their knowledge and their skills and what they can do to better the country.
See? How wild is that? You know, you meet somebody and they come to you and, you know, I'm really progressive. America's a racist country. But you pose what are really just rational questions and statements about where we can move as a future. And they go, oh, yeah, actually, I totally agree with that. We are so caught up in the black and white of like, this is a progressive idea and this is a conservative idea. But when you take those away, right, and you just stand and talk to a person face to face, normal, you're not talking about ideology or anything like that, and just say, how would you like to see our country progress? More often than not, I think you're going to find agreement on these things.
Fantastic. I completely agree with you. And a lot of people would see that to be maybe a conservative view or something like that, that we need to be colorblind. But I agree that maybe we focus a little bit too much on the racialized conversation and problems where race is not truly a factor. And I do think the majority of people walking around do not hate anybody based on their skin color. We all have our little prejudices, I'm sure. But I don't think our country as a whole is racist. What do you think about that?
I can agree with you in a way, you know?
What about, like, logging on to Netflix and seeing a black creators category or Uber Eats having a black-owned restaurant? We're essentially saying we're being progressive, but segregating people at the same time and telling black people, you know, I feel like I need to boost you up a little bit because you can't do it by yourself. Yeah. I argue that we should move away from that and go towards sort of a race blind, a sexuality blind, yes. You know, future to where we're not talking about this.
A sex and race blind.
Yeah.
Wow.
What do you think about that?
I love that.
You love that?
I love that.
Okay. He loves that. Did you hear that? But an interesting moment that I want to focus on was when I said, you know, I don't think the average person walking down the street is truly racist. Like, most people are not racist. I said, can you agree with me that America's maybe not that racist? You can feel that bit of hesitation that I've been told for so long that America is a racist country. I'm not going to get on video and say that it's not. Even though we went through all those discussions about, you know, the way we're progressing, the future that we want to move towards, and those discussions indicate that America is not a racist country. The fact that we're even having this conversation on the street indicates that America is not a racist country. But there's still that attachment to those ideas. When I was on the left, man, it was hard. I was being confronted with all these thoughts that were completely changing everything that I believed. But deep down in my heart, I did not want to admit it. I did not want to accept it. So even though I was thinking all these things internally, I still wanted to hold on to the idea that this country was racist. And I can sense the same thing in him right now. But he just heard the words race blind. He just heard the word sexuality blind. And he said, I've never thought of that. The mic didn't really catch it all that well, so maybe we'll put some captions or something. But he said, I've never thought of that. I love it. I love it. And guess what, baby? That's a colorblind future, which right now it seems to be the right and centrists that are advocating for and classic liberals advocating for. But the extreme progressive left does not want to see that be the future. But when you get everything laid out for you, sometimes it's just crystal clear. And this was just one of those moments. I think this is one of my favorite interviews that we did that day.
I think that we shouldn't really care all that much about it. And so many people would look at you and me and go, no, your race has to be a part of the conversation. We have to always address it. Why? It doesn't say anything about my personality. It doesn't say that whether or not you're fun or you like to party, you like to dance or whatever.
Fun or like to party, you like to dance. I love that that's the first thing that I like came up with. All I'm saying is it doesn't tell you anything about, you know, the minutiae in your life, the way you lead your life, style, your sense of humor, your moral value. I don't know why I used fun dance party, but it works. The message came across.
You know, I definitely agree with like why do we have those sections? You know, why are those put in sections? For me, I believe that we're just in this time frame of going from where we used to be and what we're wanting to move to, you know, move towards to, which is just accepting everyone for everyone. I definitely agree that it's not important to have those certain sections in the future. I believe right now it's important to highlight certain things because it's just a transitional phase of getting more people to be more open-minded and see different views.
Okay, yeah, so at least we can agree that that's where we want it to be at some point. I might argue we should do it now. You argue we should do it a little bit later. But I love that that's where you want to land too.
Yeah, I see. I have no issue with like what you know you think and then what I think. You know.
What a beautiful thing to say. I have no issue with what you think, and then I have what I think. If only everybody in America lived by that very plain and simple statement. I have no issue with what you think, and I think what I think. What a very profound thing in such a casual conversation. And a lot of people, when we talk to them on the street about affirmative action and things like the Uber Eats and the Netflix categories, they agreed that we should be moving towards a race-blind America. But a lot of them still held on to it a little bit and thought, you know, this is just a transitional period that we're going through, as he stated, and by the end, that's where we want to land. But, you know, and I'm fine with that. If you think that's where we need to be right now, but you want to land where I want to land, you know, more power to you. I can coexist with that any day. I just think that was a fantastic moment. And I think we're going to close out here. He has one final message for the audience.
And I think we need to move towards that as a country. And that's why we're doing this video, to get some civil discourse. Do you have any final thoughts or anything you want to share with the people watching?
Just be nice to people, dude. You don't know what people are going through. You know, just be nice. Just be nice. Be open. Be happy. Put a smile on your face. Make someone's day. Compliment someone. And just do what makes you happy and keep progressing, man.
I love it. Thank you so much for being in the video today.
Great little sweet way to close out that one. And now we're going to get into somebody who wasn't so nice. So
I think there's plenty of class issues that we face as a society that white and black people share. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. So what makes a low-income white person who's underprivileged different than a low-income black person who's underprivileged?
The racialization of each class.
What does the racialization look like? Say, a white person who's underprivileged and low-income growing up in Appalachia versus a black person growing up in Compton who's low-income and underprivileged. What's the difference?
Geography and racialization.
Racialization. What can you define what that means? What does that look like? And I'm sure I'm going to press him on this and ask what that looks like here shortly. This starts off like a very good, clean, back-and-forth interview. And then it, you know, gets sour pretty quickly.
And what does the racialization look like? What makes them different in that sense? Are they treated differently?
Yes.
How so?
Via the law.
Is there a specific law that, you know, privileges white people over black people in the United States?
No, but the application.
How so?
Via the way that policing is enforced differently in Appalachia, and I don't know what the example of the black community you use was.
Sure, Compton or any.
Compton, sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what disparities in policing do you think we are witnessing as a nation right now?
Well, I mean, the number of police per square unit of property and population is wildly different in Compton versus West Virginia.
It is wildly different. You know, it's also different. The crime rate. I mean, I work specifically with LAPD out here in Watts, and Compton's not too far. The crime rate is absolutely insane. You go on one ride along and you will have your mind blown by what's happening in these communities. So I think a lot of people use this as a talking point, particularly when they're talking about racism, and they have very little understanding of what these communities look like and what is happening in them. And they likely have never been there, never spent a day or even an hour in these communities to even know what they are addressing. And when you talk to the people who live in these communities, a lot of them will say, you know, they love to use our neighborhood as an example. Both the left and right love to do that, love to use these neighborhoods as examples without ever visiting them, without ever seeing what they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And when you go and see it, it will blow your mind and give you a whole new perspective on the issue. I didn't get into it with this particular guy. As I said, this got sour very quickly. But in Watts specifically, they do big events with the police officers out there, and there are mothers whose kids are getting murdered who beg for police presence and beg for unity amongst the police officers and the people in the community, because the issues of crime, gang violence, drugs, prostitution run deep, very, very deep. And while people will have talking points about over-policing, you have the people living in the communities going, excuse me, can we get more help out here? Can we please get police officers who can handle all these issues? We had a guy drive up to our squad car the last time I was on a ride-along and roll down his window, honk his horn, and go, yo, my house is getting broken into right now. A guy is literally broken through my window. He's in the house. I don't know if he's armed. I don't want to go in there and mess with him. Can you go and take care of that? And they were so overwhelmed with calls of people shooting each other or brandishing guns and running around the neighborhoods with them that they couldn't even get to this guy's house being broken into right at that moment. So they just have to let that happen and then come back later. That's what these communities are dealing with. And to use them and say, oh, well, they're being over-policed simply because of their race, when police officers are not there to just put people away, to do the old carrot and the stick, they build relationships in these communities. They love the people. They love the communities that they police. They are fully integrated, for the most part, with the communities that they police. Now, you have your bad police officers who love to exercise their power in ways that are completely unsavory. But by and large, the police officers, specifically in some of the most dangerous areas here in California, are wonderful, wonderful people who have such a great rapport with the people who live in the areas that they police. So just from a person who has had personal experience working with these police departments, these talking points are so stale to me.
Okay. So when we look at police brutality and police encounters, it seems as though the black population, and not even the whole black population, specifically young black males, tend to express a distinct amount of criminality that's more so than any other demographic. So you have a small section of the black community contributing to nearly 25% of the crimes in America. Is that over-policing if those are the criminality stats?
Yes, absolutely.
Why would they be doing that?
Not my problem.
Not your problem. But it is. It's, you know, you're stating that there is a problem. You're stating that America is racist. Not my problem. If that is not a full example of wokeism itself, of screaming and crying about America being racist and this and that, and then when you go, you know, why is this happening? Not my problem. It's not my problem. You know, those lower income black people who are over-policed, it's not my problem. I don't know why they're doing that. Do you think, like, to the people who are watching this right now who may agree with this young man, do you think police departments pay the salary of police officers and just throw them in a neighborhood where they're not needed and go, you know, I know there's not a lot of crime happening here. I know there's not much for you to do, but I want you to go over-police this area. Do you think that's, a point of motivation for not only the police departments, but our government that funds them? Why would they be allocating hundreds of thousands of dollars towards police officers who don't have enough crime to respond to? Just a question.
Fair enough. Okay, so just to sum up here, class is an issue, but racialization to you plays a massive role in the class issue as well.
Yes.
Okay. So as a society, do you think that we should be tackling class first, or should we tackle race first, or should we bundle them both together?
Bundle them both together. There's no separation between the two.
Come on now. I think there's a distinct separation between class and race.
Okay. And last question that we've been asking everybody. We're right near UCLA, the campus. And if I applied to UCLA and you applied to UCLA and we both had the same resume, I'd get in sooner than you would because I'm a black female. And we've moved forward with affirmative action scholarships, hiring. But it is in their guidelines that they do affirmative action scholarships and bring in students with affirmative action.
I mean, that's a totally unjustified statement to say that you get in and I wouldn't.
So let's say in this instance it doesn't happen, but UCLA does engage in affirmative action,
yes,
scholarships and student admissions. Okay, is that something that you support?
Yes. Well, you know, I mean, affirmative action, I think, is the wrong expression of the right ideal.
Okay. And what would be the proper expression?
You know, abolishing tuition for all state universities and full communism.
Full what?
Communism.
Oh, full communism. Okay.
I should have known that was where this conversation was going to go to. Full communism, because, you know, all higher education should be free. We should be paying for everybody to go get their gender studies degree or study English for the next 4 years of their lives. And the money will just appear magically from daddy government and everybody will be able to go to whatever college, whatever state college they want to go to, because communism, it's always worked in the past. Right, ladies and gentlemen? It's never killed anybody, led to famine, led to any sort of tyranny or totalitarianism. Communism is tried and true, if you ask me.
Do you think maybe as a country it'd be better if we move forward with, say, job applications, scholarships, anywhere there where there's an opportunity given to somebody without putting in things like race and gender, and we just judge people based on their merit and accomplishments?
No, I mean, America has never been a meritocracy. It's absolutely ludicrous to believe that. And if you do, I have a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn.
If something has never been a meritocracy, does it mean that it could never be?
In America's case, yes.
It just blows my mind. You know, you gotta be... I tread lightly with people who say things like never. Never is a very, very strong word, and a word that honestly shouldn't be utilized very often, if ever, almost, because that's a very 100% of the time. That's saying never, ever, ever. Among all the span of time that we will be here as a country, America could never be a meritocracy and never has been one. Strong, strong statement. And it just goes to show, you know, the ideas, their ideals are set in the wrong place. You should want this country to be a meritocracy. And what basis do you have for saying that it never could be? When you have an entire group of people who I would say represent a majority in this country advocating for exactly that, that we judge people based off their merit.
So in the words of, say, Ibram X. Kendi, who's known to be a big supporter of things like critical race theory, we fix past discrimination with present discrimination. Would you support that?
No.
Is it not discriminatory to look at scholarships and job applications and give a bump to those who have a certain race?
No.
If I flip this around and said, you know, UCLA is now accepting all white applications before accepting all black applications, and asked him, is that discrimination? He'd have a resounding yes to that question. But because it is black people and people of color being elevated, it's not discrimination? Curious.
What would you define that as if it's not discriminatory?
A right-wing talking point.
The guidelines written in virtually every college almost in America that says they are going to look for people who are people of color or of a certain gender or sexuality before they look at white, cisgendered, heterosexual people. That's a right-wing talking point.
But affirmative action clearly states, you know, we give an added bonus to those who have a race or a gender or an identity from a marginalized community. Would that not be discrimination?
No.
Why is that?
Because it's taking into account historical factors that pure discrimination doesn't necessarily do.
Just by simply being black, that's taking historical factors into it?
No, I mean, if you can say that the history of black America is no different from white America, then maybe you're more advanced, but it's not, so it doesn't.
The history is very different, but I don't think it speaks to how we should be treated differently in today's day and age.
I mean, that's your opinion.
Past discrimination and present discrimination, which is exactly the words of Ibram X. Kendi. That is what he stated in his roundabout way of making his argument.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you for your time and thank you for your interview. Okay, fair enough.
I don't want to shake your hand. And if we went any further into that, I'm sure there's footage somewhere. He went off on us after the interview was over, asking for royalties on the video because it's his content, technically. I don't know where he got that idea from. He went as far as to call us, I think, like garbage human beings because we work at PragerU. He called Dennis a very not nice word that I cannot even repeat because he was so angry. And if you watch that interview from start to finish, you can see he stands up with such confidence in the beginning because he feels like, you know, I'm going to get in this and I'm going to win. I'm going to teach this girl about discrimination, or maybe he thought I would have views that were aligned with his, although I think when he saw that PragerU sticker, he probably figured out it was not on the same team. And as he started getting caught in all the little arguments he was making, the answers got shorter. His little quips got a little bit more aggressive, and by the end of it, he was just full emotional explosion, upset at us for going through this interview. So, you know, you win some, you lose some. I felt like we won that one. And hopefully the young man has had some thoughts circling around his head since we ended that interview, although I don't think he was happy with us at all. So this next conversation is going to be very different from the last one. I actually think this one was the most nuanced conversation we had that day, and somebody who actually posed questions about what I meant by saying racism and systemic versus individual and all these things. And we went back and forth, and he actually taught me something in the way that he was responding. So let's look at this next discussion.
Is this a racist country?
I feel like those words are too big. Okay. You know, like what is racist, right? Like,
yeah, so we'll break it down in two different ways. I think there's racism on an individual level where I could look at you and go, oh my gosh, he's white, I don't want to talk to him. And then there's this idea that America is systemically racist, that our systems and institutions are actually holding down people of color. Do you believe that?
I mean, those systems change over time, right?
Absolutely they do.
It's kind of hard to say, like, people, I think you have to be more specific, right?
So when you have an organization like Black Lives Matter that says, you know, America is a racist country and it's constantly holding us back, we're dealing with police brutality, are you in line with that messaging?
Probably not.
Okay, and what would make you come to that conclusion?
Well, again, I think, like, the terms are too broadly defined for me to be in complete agreement with it. I mean, you know, maybe in some instances, yes, and in some instances, no, right?
Right, that's exactly where I lie on it. I'm sure there's definitely instances of systemic racism, but a lot of people will say that legislatively, you know, black people are not equal to white people. Do you agree that we don't have the same rights in this country?
Legislatively, no. But, you know, I think sometimes in practice there can be a discrepancy, you know, and or maybe, you know, I guess leftovers from historical incidents or policies, yes. I mean, I do believe that. So, but I don't think legislatively, no. No, not on like a legal level. No, I don't think so.
I think that's actually such a great point and a point that we should have delved into more in these conversations. But one thing, he said the question is very broad. This is an issue that we ran into as we were going through these discussions. Is America racist? Is a very broad question that could be approached from so many different angles. So I think next time we do this, we're gonna hone in a little bit and be more specific about the questions that we're asking. But there is a difference, and he's pointed out something in his answer. There is a difference between legislated racism and racism that happens in practice. You know, a lot of people point to the justice system, and they say, well, look, black men specifically are getting way higher sentences than white men for the same crime. And they point to that and go, this is a systemic problem. But it's technically not a systemic problem if you look into it. You can't point to a piece of legislation that says they have different rights. The stats around it don't take into consideration all the different details that happen when it comes to these crimes. Even if we adjusted for that and there was a disparity between black and white sentencing in the justice system, it wouldn't necessarily point to a systemic problem. Although it is taking place in one of America's systems, it in fact would point to an individual problem with specific judges who have a bias towards black individuals that they express when doing their sentencing. So we have to define these terms really, really clearly when we're having discussions, which is something that I think we're going to delve into a little more next time, as this was our first time doing this. But he makes an excellent point in saying that although it may not be legislated, you can see discrimination take place in practice.
So institutionally and systematically, we're pretty much equal and we share the same rights and privileges in this country.
It kind of depends. It depends if you define the institutions by the actual legal code in the institutions or by the actions of the people that do the kind of enforcement of, let's say, laws. Yeah, I think, you know, so it depends what systemic really means.
Right. Another excellent point. Okay, so we have to delineate, because some people can look at that and say, well, you got a judge here that's sentencing black people higher than white people. That's a systemic problem, when really it's an individual working within a system who is perpetuating their own personal bias. So when you codify equality among people of based on race, gender, any given superficial identity that you really want to use, you want to make sure that what you've codified is being used in practice. And if it's not, hopefully we root out those individuals. The same can be said for policing. You know, when people talk about policing in America and they say we have a systemic problem with racism and discrimination in policing, and then you look in the stats, you go, no, there's not. But they go, look at this individual, look at this police officer who is committing malpractice with essentially what he's doing and how he's treating people that he is arresting or have committed crimes or simply innocent people on the street. It's not a systemic issue if you have an individual within the system working in a sense that gives you the idea of malpractice. So get rid of the individual. It's not then on us to burn down the entire system, as we saw with Black Lives Matter coming after the police force and saying the whole thing is rooted in systemic racism. So it's very important that we get into these discussions, define terms, and find out what we mean when we're saying certain things.
To argue that there is systemic racism in this country, you would have to find some sort of codified version of racism or discrimination. And we don't have that. Now, where you might have instances of, say, a judge giving sentences that are larger to black people than white people, that would be an individual instance of racism rather than a systemic problem.
I don't necessarily agree with that, I think. I think that's probably where, I'm not sure your position on this because I have no idea what organization you're representing.
Sure.
But, I disagree. I think, for example, there are certain cultures inherent in certain groups of people which may disproportionately impact some other groups, for example, my family, family is Jewish, right? And, Jewish people tend to be overrepresented in higher education. Does that mean that the system is like promoting Jewishness? Probably not, but there's some culture inherent in, let's say, generally speaking, cultures which come from a certain, let's say, religious tradition in a certain historical context, which has resulted in more Jews being represented at, let's say, institutions like this one right here at UCLA, as opposed to, say, the white population in general. So do I think there's like a positive discrimination in favor of Jews? Probably not.
Right.
But at the same time, you can see that there is a culture which does generate a certain, let's say, bias, in one direction. It promotes certain qualities.
Sure.
So if America, let's say, is 63% white, I don't know, around then.
Right.
And let's say, like, there are general proclivities in white culture to judge certain groups a certain way, that even if the legal institutions aren't racist in and of themselves, just by virtue of the fact that there is a white majority and there are minorities in this country does mean, I think, that certain groups can receive a disproportionate impact from that majority group. That's what I think. So I think, maybe it's nuanced. Is America racist?
Yeah.
In the past, certainly it's been. Mm-hmm. Currently, in terms of legislation, I'm not aware. I don't think it is. But I do think that there may be certain groups which, I don't want to say wield disproportionate power, but are in positions to impose, let's say, violence or throw people in the jails for them to kind of be, recycled in this legal system, which supposedly isn't. But again, if it's a trial by jury, by peers, and the peers are mostly white, right, like it...
You think there could be...
There could be a slight sense of bias within that.
I do think so, yeah. I do think so, for sure, yeah.
So many things to unpack there. He mentions Jewish people in education as his example. They have a proclivity to go towards higher education and to value that as a culture. So if you had Jewish people sitting in the administrative jobs of a university, they might look for other Jewish people for admissions or jobs because they know that culture and assume that the culture is shared there. And while that can lead to racial disparities, and I think very quickly, if that's the mindset that you have going into it, does that mean that racism is the problem, or can culture be looked at as the root of that problem? We know when looking at the black population that they have lower rates of education, they have lower rates of two-parent households, they have lower literacy rates, they have lower rates of parents reading to their children in their formative years. So there are clearly cultural problems that I feel need to be addressed, and we can start to do that as a society, putting money into education in lower-income communities and hopefully boosting up children, promoting two-parent households, promoting reading to your children on a daily basis in order to build a culture that has a proclivity towards education. or a proclivity towards things that make people more successful in the country that we live in. So if we can, as a society, start to discuss the cultural differences that we have when it comes to Black communities, communities of color, white communities, Jewish communities, whatever community you can think of, that's where I think we will start to reach the root of the issue and hopefully build a more equal, I'm not going to say equitable, future for ourselves.
Fair enough. As a last note here, what if those discrepancies that you mentioned, things like being in prison, things like violence, things like getting into schools and higher education, could be explained by exactly what you said, things like culture? You know, Tom Sowell writes an amazing book about race and the disparities among them. And he says that what's more important than even racism or outright discrimination is growing up in a two-parent household, having parents that read to you, going to a privileged school rather than an inner-city school. Do you think that we could really solve a lot of the issues that we are saying is due to racism by actually delving into culture and trying to boost up different cultures?
Can I ask which issue you're talking about?
Any issue. So let's use the prison system and criminality as an issue. The Black population is about 13% of America, but makes up about 25 to 26% of the crimes in this country. And a lot of that can be explained with culture. The Black community has a real problem with fatherlessness, about 70% of them growing up without fathers. And when we fix that, it tends to fix the jailing and criminality issue. Do you think that maybe as a culture, we should stop focusing so much on racism and really get down to cultural problems and solving them?
I definitely think that's a conversation that's been eclipsed as of late. So I think maybe, yes, it would be good to integrate those two conversations. I wouldn't say that, you know, one should necessarily take priority over the other, because I think both things can be true at the same time. Like, I do think, you know, that maybe that conversation is definitely neglected in public discourse, I think. But at the same time, I think that there are real effects of racism that could be described in some way as systemic that do exist in this country. So I think, but at the same time, if you're talking about like an average person, right, like on the street, and is the determining factor in this person's success or failure more likely to be, say, racism writ large, or let's say some problem in the family or some problem in society, like some problem in, like, with their upbringing or their personal lives or their personal decision, I'd say that they have way more control than the current media narrative kind of puts forth, if that makes sense.
This guy should be doing my job. Honestly, he's so good at communicating exactly what is going on. And I like that he said that, you know, the cultural issues that people of all races are experiencing are sort of being eclipsed, as he said, by this narrative of racism and systemic oppression and things like that. And he even goes as far as to say, you know, we should talk about racism, systemic oppression, and try to delve into any examples of that we can find and root that out. But it shouldn't eclipse the conversations that we should be having surrounding culture.
But I do think that both conversations have to be had, because they're both important. And there are certainly situations, I think, where minorities in this country can feel discriminated against, just partly by virtue of being a minority, partly because of, you know, residues of things like redlining. But again, on a legislative level, no. On an enforcement level, I think that there are. And in terms of addressing an individual person, if they came up to me and said, is my success or failure in this country determined by this category of race? And I would say that might be a slim factor, but there are a lot of other factors which I think are much more important. Get, like you said, having two parents in the home, reading to the children, you know, discipline, things like that. That's more important, and that's probably more the things an individual should focus on than these, like, wide, you know, ranging words.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. Well, guys, that was the video. You heard from a lot of different people today, some of whom agreed with me, some of whom didn't, some of whom started out disagreeing with me, and then we got them a little bit over to our side. I think people are just scared to admit sometimes, or just not as aware of what their views actually are until they're questioned about it and we have a discussion about it. I hope you guys learned something, maybe from me, maybe from the other people that you heard from, because we got a whole spectrum of beliefs on this issue in particular. But wait!
If you like that video, please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single time we post new content for you, and we're constantly posting new content for you guys. Again, leave a comment down below. What's the next question we should go out onto the street with? What do you want to hear from average, everyday Americans about? What social issues should we be tackling and promoting civil discourse on? Let me know down below. Again, please subscribe if you like what we're doing. We're trying to encourage conversation, and again, have your conversation down in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. Is there a point that I missed that you wish I would have made? Is there someone you liked, someone you didn't like? Is there an argument that you heard from a differing perspective that might have swayed your opinion? That last guy swayed my opinion on how I'm going to talk about race in the future. Let me know if anything like that happened to you watching this video, and we'll see you next time.